How would you like to determine your soul's path when it's reincarnated? And what does that all mean? In a moment, astrologer Marie Shaw joins us, and we'll jump right into her work. One of her books is called Book of Love, Horoscopes, Palmistry, Numbers, Candles, Gemstones, and Colors, and also Soulmates. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Great to have you with us. Maria Shaw back with us as well. She's one of the country's most popular astrologers and the millions of fans and followers. She's known for her amazing accuracy and predictions for all kinds of folks in Hollywood, all over the place. She has spent the past 20 years counseling people from all walks of life on matters of the heart. She uses astrology, numerology, and her own intuition when guiding people to make positive life changes and choices. Noted author as well. Maria, welcome back. How many books do you have out now?
I think I have 9 books published in 11 languages. And thanks again for having me back on.
Oh, it's great. It's great timing to have you back, too. What a fast year, isn't it?
Oh, my goodness. I predicted last time when I was on your show early in the year that this year was going to fly by. And here we are almost into 2022.
I can't wait, actually. I want to get this year over with. It's been a good year for some. It's been a horrible year for a lot of people, but let's just move on. How did you, Maria, get started in astrology? How did that happen for you?
Well, I actually used to do what you do. I was a radio announcer. I was a disc jockey. I had my own show, and then I was a television newscaster in Michigan. And I'm adopted, and I moved markets because I had to move with my family, and I couldn't break into one of the markets. So, at the same time, I met my biological mother, and she was a real estate executive, but an astrologer by night. And she said that I would do very good in this field. And, you know, astrology is like a foreign language. When somebody's talking the moon conjunct Saturn and this and that, it's a foreign language. I had no clue as to what even she was talking about. But she trained me on how to read the tarot. I was doing it just for fun. And I think when you're on the right path, there's a domino effect. And from those little lessons from my mother, I needed a job. So I just started temporarily putting up signs in the local grocery stores that said psychic house parties. And from there, it took off. So that's basically how I got started.
Good for you. Michigan's my home state. Whereabouts in Michigan were you in the media?
WNEM TV5 in Saginaw.
Saginaw, Michigan. Saginaw, Michigan. That's right. Great market, too. Were you there when Rich Fisher was there? That would have been some time ago.
I was. And then I worked at WYCD in Detroit, CBS, the country station. I had my own talk show there, and then I had a show with on what they call psychic radio that they had as an offshoot of CBS. But, yeah, Rich Fisher was in my market. Actually, he was the anchor man when I was in high school. And then I became I did the anchor desk at WEYI TV 25 in Flint when I was only 19 years old. So this is a long time ago. But I'll tell you what, I enjoyed the media back then. It was a whole different ball game. And every day was an adventure. You know, for a 19-year-old kid to be doing the news and getting up and reporting all over. And, you know, Flint was quite the city, still is, you know. It was a lot of action for a 19-year-old.
Rich was a great newsman. Ended up going to WXYZ in Detroit. I was in that market. And then I think he's passed on now, hasn't he?
Yes, he has. Bill Bonds, of course, was a legend in Detroit, too.
Yep.
He's gone. I'm not sure. I know Diana Lewis retired from Channel 7. I haven't followed her since then. But, yeah, there's a lot of great newscasters and broadcasters came out of Detroit.
I worked with Joe Glover, Ray Lane, Robbie Timmons, Terry Murphy, Jerry Hodak, all those folks at the time.
All the big legends, yes.
Good people. I got my foundation there. My first radio job, Maria, was at the then WCAR, which was 1130 on the AM dial. There's a different WCAR out there now, but that was my first radio station job back in 1971.
Wow.
69,
it was a
great market. Oh, it is. Detroit's a great town. My mother's still out there. She's 92 years old.
Oh, God bless her. Wow. Yeah, that's where I was born, in Detroit. Raised outside of Flint on a little farm, but was born in Detroit, so proud to say I'm from Old Town.
Absolutely. Well, you're much younger than I am, but it's a great city, isn't it?
Yeah, I love it.
All right, we just had a Hunter's full moon, a gorgeous full moon for people who had an opportunity to see it. What does that mean to us astrologically speaking?
Oh, yes. We had this this full moon in the sign of Aries. And the full moon in the sign of Aries, the energy will last for at least a couple days more intensely, and for the next 2 weeks until we have the new moon. But there's an extreme amount of energy that's been happening because of this full moon and because of Mars in Libra. A lot of people can't get sleep. People get up in the middle of the night and they can't get back to sleep. And I know a lot of people are feeling this, but this particular full moon, George, is very transformational. A lot of people are at a breaking point of some sort, and I think this is a time, especially late October, we're pushed to kind of suit up, show up, and make some changes. So the universe in this full moon is pushing us to act on something that's needed our attention for a while. So a lot of people are maybe quitting jobs or putting their house up for sale or maybe deciding what they want to do with the relationship. But this is a time that we're supposed to let go of any fear, you know, because Aries is ruled by Mars. It's competitive. It's high energy. It's fearless. So we're going to have a lot of motivation to move forward. And the only thing that will really hold us back during this time is fear of change. So I'm telling everybody, don't be afraid of change right now. Mercury's gone forward, and it's a time really, you know, to take the bull by the horns and go for it. So we're here to conquer our fear of change under this full moon. That's going to bring something to the table that's going to help us grow and become prosperous, and don't allow other people to stop your progress. So a big energy this week and into the next two.
Maria, do you sense that a lot of people seem to be whacked out right about now?
Yeah. I mean, I have had so many calls in the last 2-3 days leading up to this full moon, George, but I've noticed that people have been whacked out since the middle part of September when Mars went into the sign of Libra. Mars is a god of war and chaos and energy, and when it's in the sign of Libra, it doesn't work well there. It's in its opposite sign. It's supposed to be in Aries, so it's more passive-aggressive, but it doesn't know how to contain all this energy. It doesn't work well in Libra. Who wants peace and harmony? So since the middle of September, people have been anxious. Some have been argumentative. They can't sleep, like I was saying earlier. They're getting up and can't get a full 7 hours, 8 hours of sleep anymore. This is going to shift on Halloween. Mars is going to go out of Libra and into Scorpio.
Is that a good thing?
I think it is, because Mars, traditional ruler with Scorpio, until Pluto came along. So Mars works a little bit better in the sign of Scorpio. And then Mercury just went forward, so we're going to in Libra too. So people are going to feel like there's a shift that's more pleasant, I guess I would say.
Yeah, I've just noticed not only just where I'm in St. Louis right now, but in Los Angeles where I was, St. Louis, but all over the country. People are just acting strange. Do you think COVID has something to do with it too, or is it strictly celestial?
Oh no, I think it's a perfect storm of everything. Everything evolved.
It's hitting everybody at the same time, isn't it?
Yeah, and the collective. You know, I think that, you know, we have so much energy. Everybody's thinking or feeling much of the same thing, and when we have that, everybody, it's like these receptors go off in our body, and the more that we feel these things, the more these receptors grow, and we get in tune to this, and we feed it. They just keep getting fed. It would become more anxious and more upset and more worried, and so we have to stop sometimes and check ourselves and change our thought pattern when this happens. So if you're feeling something heavy or negative or worrisome, you might just want to stop yourself and say, cancel, clear. The universe has my back, or it's going to be a great day, whatever you need to shift or change. But I think because the collective, we're all feeling this antsy feeling or just kind of choked and trapped. I think a lot of us feed off of that. Those receptors in our body definitely pick up on that.
We're with Maria Shaw. Her website is her name, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. A couple of her recent books include Book of Love and Soul Matters as well. And, you know, I've always wondered, and we're going to get into a lot of this tonight, but how can celestial events influence our patterns and our lives and what we're doing and what we don't do?
That's a really, really good question, because we're all influenced by the heavens, by the moon. You know, the moon changes every 2.25 days. It's a new sign. You know, just how the tides are influenced by the moon. So are we, because we're made up of mostly water. But let's just use example. We've had Mercury, which is the planet of communication, retrograde since September 27th. And so when you have planets retrograde, you actually feel like you're slowing down and you're reviewing. And this summer, actually since last spring, we've had a tremendous amount of planets in the sky retrograde. And we've just had 4 go forward this month. So people are shifting and they're feeling like as if they can move forward too. So as the planets do some flip-flops and twists and turns, we do too. So it influences our ability to move forward or to sit still and not want to change. It influences our sleep patterns, how we look at things. So, yeah, wherever the planets are moving, they can definitely affect our thought patterns, our physical self, everything.
Maria, what is the soul to you? What do you think it is?
I think we have 4 bodies: body, mind, spirit, soul. And the soul is the oldest one of the 4 bodies. And it's a part of us that has been around hundreds and hundreds, well, thousands of years. It has more experience than our other 4 bodies. And we really should let the soul lead, because it has the most experience and the most knowledge. But our body and our mind want to lead. And we get in a lot of trouble when we don't allow our soul to lead. So I think it's a part of us that, one of our 4 bodies, that is probably the most majestic part. And I feel that it has the most wisdom. And if we can tap into our soul needs and yearnings and our soul journey, I think our life can become a super highway. You know, I always feel like, you know, I know I'm human, but I'm a soul having a human experience. And I've started to live my life under that theory rather than a human having a soulful experience. And I think when I do, I live more in the moment and I look at things in a bigger way. It's a whole different way and experience of looking at life. So that's kind of my quick theory of a soul.
You don't think soul and spirit are one and the same?
Body, mind, soul, spirit. Some people do. I kind of feel like there's a little bit of a difference. You know, we always talk about the souls and all the soul's journeys and past lives and how many lifetimes, how many times have your soul reincarnated. And, you know, I kind of feel like my spirit is in energy form too, a separate energy form in some way. And I think they work in harmony together. I think this is a time also, because I just want to retrace here, because of the fact that we've had so many planets retrograde, people are asking this very question: what is my soul here to do? You know, what is spirit saying to me? So there's a lot of people really examining this question about why they're here, more so in the last several months than maybe for several years, because of astrology is pushing us to look at these things from a different perspective than we have for a while.
There is a star out there called Arcturus that you say has aligned with our sun. What does that mean to us?
Well, since last weekend, maybe just a little bit before, we've experienced this amazing energy of Arcturus. It's Arcturus Gateway. And so the sun has aligned with that superstar, and that's created this highly charged, high-frequency energy that is beaming down to Earth. And this is a star associated with prosperity and also intuition, highly charged psychic energy. So if any of your listeners have had feelings of deja vu in the past 5-6 days, or become their senses have become more heightened, it's probably because of this gateway. This doesn't happen very often, but when it does, it's a great energy to tap into.
I'm
getting manifest during this time too.
All these things are bombarding me, deja vu cases and everything. What's going on?
Well, I think a lot of that has to do with the full moon, Taurus, with planets moving forward. Like I said, we've had 4 planets move forward just this month. Thank goodness. I think we have 2 left. And Mercury retrograde, you know, just stopped on, the 18th. So we almost feel like we're stopping, we're starting, we're shifting. How much more can our physical body take? Sometimes our body can't keep up with all these shifts, and that's why a lot of people are feeling very tired and exhausted, because they're being pulled in a lot of different directions, a lot of energy beaming down from the heavens. A lot of it's actually very good, but sometimes it's just too much. And this is why this time of year people need to, rest, relax more, spend maybe a little more time in meditation, take some time out, and just kind of find something to do that takes their mind off that daily grind, too, because a lot of things are being shot at us right now.
Maria, do you know astrologer Mark Lerner by any chance?
Sounds familiar, but I don't know him personally, no.
All right, good guy, and he tells us that Mercury retrograde is over, but a lot of people are still feeling that weird feeling, aren't they?
That's right. And a lot of people say that they'll call me and say, it still seems like a Mercury retrograde. I'm still having problems. I thought this was over. Well, we have a shadow period. And this is why so many people are still having troubles and don't feel like it's completely over. Mercury is actually a little sluggish as far as moving forward until November 2nd. So between now and the 2nd of November, the shadow period. However, it is a time of heightened intuition. And there may be a lot of messages revealed to people during this shadow period that have been hidden during the actual retrograde. We've had the retrograde from September 27th through October 18th. This one has been a particularly hard one. In the sign of Libra, it had a lot to do with relationship drama and karma. But also people have heard from a lot of people from their past. Ex-lovers have come back, friends. I have also noticed that there has been an increased amount of people backstabbing people, talking behind their back.
Really?
Being passive aggressive. Yes, I have had more clients tell me, what is going on? I know somebody's doing something behind my back at work, or someone's lying to me, but I can't put my finger on it. And again, that's Mars in Libra, Mercury retrograde in Libra, because the sign of Libra, passive aggressive, they don't want to address anything. They don't want to cause conflict. But with Mars there, Mars is the god of war, the god of anger. So people that have been holding in anger or frustration, they're not being outright with it. They're doing a lot of this behind the scenes. But there's been a lot of people that felt like they've been backstabbed. But pay close attention, everybody out there, to the signs and the symbols from the universe today through the 2nd. And also a little side note, if you've lost something, if you've misplaced something, you can find it. You'll likely find it but between now and November 2nd during the shadow period.
And you also say this is not the time to take action on anything important right now.
Yeah, we have a challenging day coming up. Actually, it's on October 22nd.
That's not too far away.
I know. Usually I can look at these things and say, oh, we'll get through that. But I'm a little worried about this day. I think I'm going to go for cover. On the 22nd, Mars is going to square Pluto. Mars, again, the god of war, Pluto, power struggles. So it's not a good time to take action on the 22nd. I'm telling people, don't start anything that's really important to you. Put it off until the next day. People are just not seeing things clearly on this day. Other people want to argue, prove their point, and sometimes just argue for the sake of arguing. So I'm telling people, stay in, stay home, just play a waiting game, and also let things unfold on the 22nd before you make any decisions, because there's a lot of information coming that may have been hidden that you need before you make a big decision. So that's the 22nd.
When we come back on Coast to Coast with Maria Shaw, we're going to also talk about the 7 paths that she's talking about and what they all mean to us. We'll also get into the sun moving into Scorpio. What does that all mean? And of course, we'll talk more with her about what's in store for us next. Our special guest is Maria Shaw, the astrologer. We're going to take calls with Maria next hour here on Coast to Coast, and she will do readings. We'll need your birth date, month, day, and year, and, of course, a question for her, and then she'll tell you a little bit about what's going to happen. So make sure you're part of the program. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie with you, along with Maria Shaw, the astrologer. A couple of her books, Book of Love, Horoscopes, Palmistry, Numbers, Candles, Gemstones, and Colors, And also there's another book called Soul Matters as well. So what are the seven paths you talk about, Maria?
Well, the theory behind the seven soul paths is that we're all on a spiritual journey as well as enjoying a human existence. So when your soul reincarnated, it decided what journey it wanted to take based on what it needed to experience, learn, share for its growth. So each of these paths have specific lessons, challenges, joys, opportunities, and most people will have a reoccurring theme on the path. So that's how they're going to know what kind of path they're on. So the seven paths are the path of the teacher, of the saint, healer, nurturer. They're all kind of combined under the saint. The path of the sinner. I wonder how many people are on that one.
Or how many would admit to it.
Exactly. It's really not that bad when we get into it. The path of the karmic gatekeeper. We have more karma with our family than the family of origin that we're born into than mostly any other types of relationships in our lives. So there's a lot of people that are known as the family gatekeeper. The path of the lover is an important one. The path of the mystic. And there's also the path of the seeker or the student.
Is everybody one of those seven?
Usually, yeah. Everybody could be one of those seven. And sometimes they can do two in a lifetime. And yes, if you're on the path of a sinner, you can still move into the path of the saint at some point in your lifetime if you walk that path and you complete the lesson.
Let's go through these different paths and just give us a little idea of what each one is. The path of the teacher.
Okay, the path of the teacher, I've noticed that a lot of people are in that one. And you don't have to be in the classroom with little kids or kindergartners to be on the path of the teacher. The path of the teacher is really just being able to share information, educate, and inspire other people. The path of a spiritual teacher is one of service, too, but teachers are here for encouragement, advice, and hugs. And like I said, you don't have to get up in front of a class to talk to be a teacher. You can live by example. You can work at McDonald's as a manager and teach people, especially the high school kids that work there, self-esteem, motivation, how to do a great job. You're a teacher, George, is speaking on the radio and sharing information. Mm-hmm. So you could be an intellectual teacher. You could be a spiritual teacher. You could be a body teacher. It just depends on what your energy, what you want to do with that. But making a commitment to the teacher path is key. It's not necessarily a commitment to one person. It could be writing a book. You're sharing information with the world. You're teaching the world. Blogs, posting on Facebook, being on the radio, on TV. And they always say when the student is ready, the teacher appears. But sometimes when the teacher is ready, the student appears too, and the opportunity to walk that path of the teacher and do the work is presented. So a lot of people out there may resonate with the path of the teacher.
Interesting. The path of the saint, healer, nurturer, that's all one.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of, they all kind of mix together. And it doesn't mean you have to be perfect or religious or holy. The path of the saint isn't really always about your inner workings. It's about service to others. So you could be just a crazy person with a lot of chaos in your life and who makes a lot of mistakes in life and bad choices. But if you're serving mankind in some way that makes the world a better place, you're on the path of the saint. And sometimes the person you're on the outside appears to be a saint, but maybe so not much on the inside. So you're balancing the inside and outside part of the journey. I've seen a lot of people work on that. But the path of the saint is the one that helps other people. They could do it as a paid position, like nursing or psychic healer, or they could do it as a volunteer. They could work by saving animals or the earth. This is someone who makes food for food kitchens and helps people when they need the most. Being of service, selfless service is the path of the saint. And a lot of times people do it without needing acknowledgement. But here's the thing. This is not only about helping others or being a kind person. It's about service as a way of living your life, whether you're paid or not. And that's part of the saint's journey. And when you look back on your life years from now and think about all the things you've accomplished or done, if you can say, I've dedicated myself to helping others, or maybe you can say that now, then you're on the path of the saint. And a lot of people, what will happen is they'll get called upon to time and time and again to show up, to be there for people. So you are probably are a saint to your spouse, your children, your coworkers, your mm-hmm. friends, family. Most every connection, you're walking the path of the saint if you're helping.
Would an empath be part of that?
Yes. Sometimes that falls under the path of the mystic, though, too. But if you're doing it for service, you definitely and using those skills to help people with no acknowledgement, just because you want to, you know, that could be part of that. Yes.
All right. The path of the sinner. Who is that?
Okay. I wonder how many people out there feel like they are, because the path of the sinner doesn't mean that you're a bad person. It doesn't mean that you're constantly sinning. The path of the sinner, the main thing with the path of the sinner is to learn to forgive yourself, forgive other people, and to forgive yourself.
And what's your definition of sinner?
Well, I mean,
would it be somebody who violates the Ten Commandments or something else?
Not in this case. This path does not mean you're a bad person. Just as the path of the saint doesn't mean you're always a saint. The path of the sinner is difficult. It doesn't mean you're doomed, but the sinner is a karmic path. Whatever you put out comes back to you. The choices you make create a reaction. So the path of the sinner is more of a long-term process that involves relationships and events necessary to learn lessons and experience things for personal growth. And I think the path of the sinner presents itself as a pattern of struggles or sins throughout your life, a sequence of events, maybe some tragic or unhealthy relationships. But the main focus of the path of the sinner is choice, power of free will, making choices for the higher good rather than not, and the karma associated with the choices. If you make a choice that's not for the higher good, you usually will have something heavy fall in your path. You know, so some people lie, they cheat, they steal, they make a habit of doing all those things, and they wonder why their life is so difficult or why they have tragedy. But then again, there are sinners who do not do those things, who merely try to be good people and live a good life, but they make poor choices that produce grief for them. For instance, I have a client who picks bad relationships. She's a wonderful lady, but she picks bad relationships all the time, yeah. And those relationships end badly. But it was her choice to go out with these guys and stay in relationships, bad relationships, and then wonder why her life is in shambles. So the path of the sinner says, do not sin against God, but also do not sin against yourself, your higher self. Sometimes, you know, that little voice in your head is saying, don't do it.
That's right. And you still do it.
Yes. So you know what's not good for you. So sin and repent, what does that mean? It means to recognize the poor choices, stop the pattern, and forgive yourself. Forgiveness is a big part of the path of the sinner. Understanding, accepting karma, and the patterns that hold you back.
Well, that moves us into the path of the karmic gatekeeper.
Oh, yeah, that's a big one.
And I like that one.
A lot of people listening are that one. So the karmic gatekeeper is somebody that is trying to fix everything and feels like that they have a lot of work to do. Sometimes this is the most difficult one. I think we talked about this earlier in the year on the show with you, George, where there's a lot of people that are born to a family that has a lot of karma. And our first relationships with karma.
Well, and karma could be good and bad, right?
Yes, it can. It can. And it could be that you reincarnate to this wonderful family. But most families are dysfunctional. There's something to learn. You know, even as a child, you're picking up your karmic path right then and there. So karmic gatekeepers, there's usually one person in the family that feels like they have to fix the family. And if the family is very dysfunctional, they have to leave at some point to kind of acclimate themselves to what is right, what is wrong, if they're not in the middle of the chaos. And then they come back in, and they look at things from a different perspective. But you'll notice the family gatekeepers are the ones that try to hold the family together, try to create peace and harmony, try to fix things, and it wears them down. And that's why sometimes they have to leave and then re-enter the family. Most karma in the family, unfortunately, is not fixed, or dysfunction is not fixed until the end of someone's life. Most of the karma is finished on the deathbed of somebody. So everybody comes home to say goodbye. They make peace with their mother or their father or their siblings. So the family gatekeeper has a lifelong battle sometimes. but there's usually one, and they're looked at as the black sheep of the family. Other people in the family will be like, well, they're weird, or they're into that spiritual stuff, or what are they talking about? So they'll sometimes feel like an outcast, but they feel it's their duty to fix this family, to make things right, to keep everybody together, no matter how dysfunctional it may seem. And it's often a lifelong challenge. So that's the path of the karmic gatekeeper. They're trying to make it right for everybody, to educate, to teach, to love, and sometimes it at their own expense.
Are you a believer in what goes around comes around?
Yes, I am, absolutely. And I want to say this real quick. Scorpios, people that are born in late October, November, have something called cash karma, K-A-S-H. And as Scorpios, whatever they put out in this lifetime, usually it'll come back to them in this lifetime. A lot of times people will see that they may create some karma and it will come back in the next lifetime or the next. But Scorpios a lot of times will have things happen right away to them. And I'm part Scorpio. I'm a Cancerian, but I have a Scorpio ascendant. And I remember years ago, before I was into a lot of the spiritual stuff, I went to JCPenney's and I bought 5 dresses. The lady forgot to ring me up one. I didn't say anything. So I thought, oh, I got a free dress. I was probably in my early 20s. And I ended up doing some work for somebody. And the lady on the phone that was paying me for some work was using a credit card. And the credit card was stolen. And I didn't know that at the time. I just put it through. And a month later, the credit card company called me. The amount on the credit card that was issued as a chargeback was the same amount of the total amount of the 5 dresses.
Wow.
So now what I do is I am very, very, like, cognizant of everything. I always do things right. I make sure. So I was checking out at the grocery store, and the gal forgot to ring up my potato salad. And I said, hey, you forgot to ring that up. And she says, oh, my goodness, thank you so much for bringing that up. Nobody would usually mention that. Thank you for being so honest. And I'm like, oh, no, thank you, thank you. I don't want any bad karma. So I am it's not that I'm so holy and all this type of stuff. I just don't want the karma following me. The Scorpios have cash karma. They get it back in this lifetime.
The path of the lover.
Oh, that's such a nice one. The path of the lover. A lot of people like that one. The path of the lover is somebody that's looking for their soulmate. And it doesn't always have to be, a romantic relationship. But if it is, even the better. It can be romantic and non-romantic, loving affection with anyone, partner, child, relative, friend. It's a hands-on caretaking for another. So you think of your caretaking for a child, a family member. But the lover's main aspect is the heart connection and understanding oneself as divine and connecting through the heart chakra through physical contact, care, intimacy, or domestic life. And the lover, 9 times out of 10, will live with a partner or a family or a group of others and will spend a lot of time connecting and caring. So the soul journey of a relationship with this path is they're going to look back on their life and say, I knew a lot of people. I have a lot of family and friends. These are the people that remember everybody's birthday, send cards and gifts. They're there for advice. They love deeply. They can't wait until the holidays come up for everybody to get together. They're fascinated by how we're all connected. Twin flames, karma, karmic connections. They can't get enough information about how did I meet? Why did I meet? What is my soul connection? And they're always asking about the fated connections in their astrology charts, I've noticed. But their lover's spiritual path is to learn and grow from deep connections that they have with others. And these folks are not supposed to be alone. I know that Dr. Phil and Oprah will say, you can love yourself. You don't have to have a man. You don't have to have a woman. But the path of the lover, you need to be in some sort of a relationship because that's why you're here. So that's the finding true love, whatever that may be to them, is the lover's journey.
Number 6 of 7, the path of the mystic.
That one is really cool. The path of the mystic, and now this is where a lot of the people will fall, that are the psychics and the people that study metaphysics, people with higher knowledge that want to share. But the interesting thing about the mystics is a lot of times these people like to be alone. They're here to create a connection between the self and the divine. And this may be a lifetime journey, not just something that happens, like, you know, when you're 20 or 40. It often happens later in life, after age 50. And it may require a time in your life when you need to take a break from the demands of work, family and friends. They just want to be by themselves. The path of the mystic, they'll usually take some sort of a sabbatical, or you'll take a lot of little short, like, retreats by yourself. They will probably get into metaphysical studies. It usually involves prayer, meditation, reflection. These are the people that are into ritual work, working with energy, spending time in nature. But this is also a path where people feel driven to be a healer, a spiritual counselor, a minister. But the main path is understanding oneself as divine in connection with the etheric realm. So when you understand, you're going to understand that when you say you are a soul having a human experience rather than a human having a spiritual experience. And they're deeply involved with study. So they really understand, walk the talk, talk the walk, however you say that. But they understand that he or she is here to believe in something, and they strongly believe that this is their path. They know that they're here for something higher.
Maria, when we come back, we'll talk about the path of number 7, which is the seeker. We'll chat a little bit more, of course, and then we'll take phone calls. She will do readings. When you call in, tell Donna your birth date, month, day, and year, and then pass on a question to Maria, and she'll take it away.